Blog Talk Radio.
Associate Justice Anton Scalia, who has written several books and who was considered one of the incandescent intellects in the whole federal judiciary. We'll get into more of him and, of course, why you shouldn't die in Texas. That's incredible laws or lack of laws down there and regulations regarding death of people. Among the birthdays today, Claudius Nero, and of course, I, Claudius, is a famous BBC series depicting the life of one of Rome's last great emperors and also the conqueror of Great Britain. The founder of St. Augustine, Florida, Pedro de Viles, was born on this day. I wonder if Jeb Bush knows that. Galileo Galilei was born on this day, and also he was the one that said the earth was round, and of course he was brought before the Italian Inquisition, and of course this is an example of where the Pope and the Church is not infallible on matters of science. This is the issue with Pope Francis. Philosopher Jeremy Bentham, a utilitarian, his birthday. The guy who invented the Steinway piano is one of the great pianos in the world. There's also Baldwin and Yamaha, and there's another Boursin Depper, I think. I played on two of them. The founder, the guy who discovered gold, John Augustus Sutter, I think he was a German-Jewish background, and we have a swimming pool, or was a swimming pool here in San Francisco. The guy who invented the Reaper, Cyrus McCormick, and later that his family got into the newspaper business and bought and started, I think, the Chicago Tribune, which is now, I don't know who owns it right now. Susan Brownwell Anthony, first woman suffragette, her birthday. Elihu Root, who was Secretary of State in the Woodrow Wilson administration, he got a Nobel Prize today. Ernest Shackleton, a British explorer, his birthday. James Forrestal, who was Secretary of the Navy in the FDR administration and into the Truman administration, then was depressed or something, went to the Naval Hospital and supposedly committed suicide. It's one of the another mysterious deaths. Harold Ireland, great composer, and his famous song Over the Rainbow, which was used by Judy Garland quite a bit. Cesar Romero, very handsome actor, born in New York, not in Mexico. another secretary in the Defense Department or War Department, well, Defense Department for this guy, James Schlesinger, who was not Jewish but was a Methodist. An astronaut in the U.S. Navy, Roger Chaffee, his birthday. Among the deaths today, we had Charles XIII. The guy who wrote Ben-Hur was also an officer in the Civil War, Lew Wallace. Anton Cermak was assassinated. There's some controversy about that. He was down in Miami when FDR was the newly elected president in 1933. And, of course, the guy that got him, Giuseppe Zangara, was an Italian. I don't know if he was a legal immigrant or mafia, but Cermak was trying to shut down the Italian mafia in Chicago, and this is one of the reasons why it wasn't FDR who was a target. FDR, it was Anton Cermak. Now, here is two news clips from that period.
Heavily guarded on the 19th floor of Miami's prison, where he awaits punishment for his attempt to kill Roosevelt, sullen-looking Giuseppe Zangara, 33-year-old fanatic, shows no remorse for wounding six, including two women. Immediately after the shooting, he was tossed on the trunk rack of a car and rushed away from the maddened crowd to save him from lynching. Inside the prison, Sheriff Hardy cross-examines the prisoner.
Why you kill Mr. Roosevelt? What for in your mind?
I told you before. I have a tablet. All time in the mine, I get a capitalist for killing me. I suffer from this thing in the stomach for the capitalist. He knows if it's a capitalist, I know I have this sickness in my stomach.
If Mr. Hoover goes out of the president, you kill him then?
If it is out of the president, then he's a killer.
You don't kill him if he's not president?
No. If it is out of the president, then no, he's a killer.
You like Mr. Roosevelt as a man?
I like him. He knows the president. I'm not going to kill him if he knows the president. He's the president.
You don't like him for president?
That's all.
As a man, he's all right.
As a man, he's all right. As a president, he's all right.
Now, there's some debate about that. Here's another audio clip, a historical clip from that period.
When the first shot was fired, I realized he was shooting at someone, and I taken my right arm and pushed the pistol up just as hard as I could.
Cermak, mortally wounded with a bullet in his lungs, told FDR, "I'm glad it was me instead of you." The gun-waving man was Giuseppe Zangara, an Italian-born unemployed bricklayer.
You don't like him for president?
That's all.
As a man, he's all right.
As a man, he's all right. As a president, he's all right.
Zangara's last words before his electrocution were, "Goodbye, adieu to the world. Go ahead, push the button."
Yeah, Charles Chessman, I think, said the same thing. Anyway, there's some debate about this, a lot of debate, as a matter of fact. And, of course, Walter Winchell did a series, The Untouchable, which was largely fiction. But he did deal with the Zangara assassination of Cermak. Now, Cermak, as I said, was a bohemian member of the Democratic Party and a powerful politician. And it was a fight between him, the Irish, and the Italians over political control in Chicago and Cook County, and he was trying to crush the mob, and is believed, and Winchell claims that Zangara was actually there to shoot Cermak, not Roosevelt. So we shall see whether she'll go, whether Pat Butler, who's supposedly writing a book on assassinations, I'm going to try to interview him and get his take on this. Now, this is interesting. Anton Scalia, who we believe was one of the incandescent intellects in the entire federal judiciary, wrote interesting books, and it's recommended that his book, Making Your Case, is a good book for both lawyers and pro se litigants. Pro se litigants is someone who doesn't have a lawyer but has an issue that he or she feels the court has an obligation to hear and to rule on. Anyway, one thing about Scalia, and this came up in the Steve Neri case and other issues, he hated state courts which defied federal jurisdiction, and this was the case in the Steve Neri case where they forged documents and did a lot of other things, and they were put on notice by the Navy Department. They had no jurisdiction, but because of the gay politics and that dominate San Francisco, or the Ernest Rome rump politics that has enveloped the city, in a city where anything and everything goes. We have that problem. Also, the other issue is the Constitution, whether it's a living document that what it was agreed to when the Articles of Confederation were scrapped and the states agreed to become federalized. Canada has Confederation, which is interesting. Scalia believed that you shouldn't be tampering with the Constitution, but there are other people who think that, oh, you can rewrite the Constitution or amendments to it, which are in tune with, quote, what they see as the times. Now, there was interesting. Jack Cashel wrote a fiction book, Chautauqua, about the assassination of a Supreme Court justice. Also, there was a book by former lawyer John Grissom, who's written several books, called The Pelican Brief, which is about the assassination of a U.S. Supreme Court justice. This was made into a movie starring Julia Roberts. Now, among the other events today, the USS Maine was sent to Havana Harbor at Cuba when Spain ruled the last colony in this hemisphere, and the battleship blew up mysteriously, and of course, William Randolph Hearst, who had the New York Journal, and Joseph Pulitzer, who had a paper. Joseph Pulitzer was a German Jewish heritage who came to America. Both of them were major newspaper publishers, and they beat the war drums. They were war hawks to remember the Maine, and this is where we get the term yellow journalism. And also we see this in the Pulitzer Prizes today. They had Walter Durante, who worked with the New York Times, was a correspondent in Moscow during the 30s, where he was co-opted by Stalin, and he covered up Stalin's deliberate starvation and massacre of the kulaks who wouldn't refuse to be collectivized. And, of course, Walter Durante got a Pulitzer Prize for this, and to this day, Pulitzer Committee, which is consists of publishers who decide which of their employees should get the Pulitzer Prize. The Pulitzer Prize has never been revoked from the New York Times nor from Walter Durante, who was a drunk, had a bad leg, and Stalin co-opted him with a car, a vodka, and a houseboy. You read the rest from there. Now, the Spanish were falsely blamed for the explosion of the Maine, and the war cry was, remember the Maine, and William McKinley, who had served in the American Civil War, did not want to go to war with Spain, but Hearst and Pulitzer beat the drums, and I think I should get into this little clip in Citizen Kane, where Orson Welles refers to the situation in Cuba, and he talks that he was warned that there was no Spanish atrocities, which among the things that the newspapers claimed that they were stopping American ships and stripping women naked to, abuse them. And this was, just the worst kind of journalism. Here is Citizen Kane, which is actually Hearst, on newspapers. This is how Orson Welles wrote this into his script and this film, which was banned by Hearst, mentioned in his newspapers and in the theaters, which he controlled at the time.
Is that really your idea of how to run a newspaper?
I don't know how to run a newspaper, Mr. Thatcher. I just try everything I can think of.
Charge, you know perfectly well there's not the slightest proof that this armada's off the Jersey
Coast. Hello, Mr. Bernstein.
Excuse me, Mr. Bernstein.
Can you
Kane.
Prove it isn't?
This just
Mr.
Came
Bernstein,
in.
I'd like you to meet Mr. Thatcher.
I'll just follow
you, Mr.
Leland.
Hello.
Mr. Thatcher, my ex-guardian. We have no secrets from our readers, Mr. Bernstein. Mr. Thatcher is one of our most devoted readers. He knows what's wrong with every copy of the Inquirer since I took over. Read the cable.
Girls delightful in Cuba, stop. Could send you prose poems about scenery, but don't feel right spending your money. Stop. There is no war in Cuba. Signed, Wheeler. Any answer?
Yes, dear Wheeler, you provide the prose poems. I'll provide the war.
That's fine, Mr. Kane.
Yes, I rather like myself.
No, right away.
I came to see you about this campaign of yours. This Inquirer campaign against the Public Transit Company.
Mr. Thatcher, do you know...
Now, that is accurate about how young Mr. Hearst, who was, quote, a liberal and progressive at the time. Later, he became a right-wing reactionary, as you could call it in his papers, did such things as when it was a slow news day, they would invent murders, especially the Chicago American, I remember that paper, where they would create fictional murders in the south side of Chicago in the black districts. Now, also on this day, St. Valentine's Day Massacre, some of the things Americans don't know about this incident was that Al Capone was out of town, that Bugs Moran was part of the Irish mob in Chicago, and he controlled the bootlegging on the north side of Chicago. At the school that I attended, he had a still out there in rural Cook County and dumped a bad batch of gin, whatever it was, into the Des Plaines River. And we were having, at the time, the school was having a Pierre Marquette festival, and went to the priest, went to check out the site, and this foul smell of the bad batch of booze had polluted the river. And he called up Bugs Moran and said, who was Catholic, and told him, you know, clean this mess up or else. And so Bugs Moran did clean that up. But Bugs Moran was lucky. He did not go to the warehouse. It was intended that he would be among the people to be what you might call a mob assassination. Now, that warehouse, the Werner warehouse up on North Clark Street in what is Lincoln Park in Chicago, later was owned by Martin Connelly. It's called the Connelly Werner Warehouse. Martin Connelly was a moderately conservative mayor, Catholic. He went to the same church that I later went to, St. Ida's. And he was a bachelor, and he was a nice guy. I talked to him a few times in retirement. Anyway, he owned that warehouse, and today it was later torn down in the 60s, and it's believed to be a site of condos and affordable housing today. One of the things about Connelly, which is interesting, that he thought he should be renominated for reelection as mayor of Chicago, and Richard Daley and another crowd of the Democrats and Irish wanted control of the machine and of Cook County. So what happened was they staged the coup, and one of the things that they used against Connelly, they lined up the blacks, who they basically disliked and wanted to keep on the south side. Mayor Connelly had the police, Chicago police, crack down on gambling, little gambling, they call it policy, in the black neighborhoods, and the black politicians were very upset about this. And Connelly wouldn't listen to them and lay off of let that gambling vice remain in the black districts. So the blacks lined up against Connelly, and when Connelly went to the meeting of the Democratic Central Committee, Daley was there, and he had everybody in his pocket, and they refused to endorse Martin Connelly for reelection. And he was really shocked. I think it might have had a heart attack. But anyway, Daley became the mayor, and he was very clever. What he did was he combined the office of mayor and head of the Democratic Party in Cook County, and he gave him all his power. Daley had been previously the finance director in the administration of Governor Adlai Stevenson. I guess he couldn't say that he was dishonest. There's nothing in his historical background about that. But his administration as mayor had many scandals, including many members of what was called the city council. They were called aldermen in Chicago, or they would be selectmen in New England or supervisors out here on the West Coast. And several of them, Thomas Keene among them, a big powerhouse, were indicted and tried and convicted of public corruption. We may have this situation here in San Francisco. So this is what's interesting about St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Also, it was so outrageous what they did that the publisher of the Chicago Tribune, Colonel McCormick, whose ancestor was Cyrus McCormick, he contacted his President Hoover and said, would you send in a strike force to deal with this corruption and these mob assassinations? And that's when they sent in Ira Erie, who was a brilliant forensic accountant. He's the guy that brought Al Capone down, not Elliot Ness. That's Walt Walter Winchell's fiction. And he sent in several top U.S. Department of Justice attorneys who got a hold of Al Capone's ledgers and accounting ledgers, and Erie went over them and found that Al Capone wasn't paying income tax on his illegal liquor that he was bringing in from Canada. So that's how Al Capone was taken down and later was sent out here to San Quentin. You can still see his jail if you – not San Quentin, Alcatraz, excuse me. And if you take the boat over to Alcatraz, you can still see Al Capone's cell. Al Capone later died of syphilis of the brain and is buried in the Catholic cemetery known as Mount Carmel, which is known as Gangster Boot Hill in a rural Cook County. And a movie that's pretty accurate is the one Al Capone starring Rod Steiger. It's a black and white film that came out in 1960, I think. And it's one that you ought to see. The other Untouchables is garbage. The one with, I forgot his name, Sean Connery played with his Scottish-Irish brogue, who says, if you bring a, if they bring a gun, a bat, you bring a gun, all that. That never happened. That's Hollywood scriptwriter's fiction. And as I said, Elliot Ness was a flake. When I worked in the federal courthouse after high school, boarding school, before I went to college, I met many people who the survivors of the war against Al Capone. Judge Robertson, Wilkinson, excuse me. Was the presiding judge in Al Capone's tax evasion trial. He had died. But what had happened was there was jury tampering, and Wilkinson found out about it, and at the last minute, he switched the juries. Now, the same thing happened in John Gotti's trial here, trial in New York, where they had tampered with the jury, and at the last minute, the federal judge learned about it and switched the juries. That's how John Gotti got convicted. So you don't mess with juries, although you can do it in San Francisco and get away with it. And this is what happened in the Steve Neri case, which we witnessed, and it's documented, where people came in to openly lobby the jurors. At least one is suspected of not even being a U.S. citizen or even living in San Francisco County. Others were connected to the relatives of the judge, Kevin Vincent Ryan, one of the most corrupt judges ever to sit on the California bench. Many documented stories about him, dating from how he lied about being born in Canada and many other things, using courtroom personnel for his political campaign, placing ads in homosexual prostitution magazines, and allowing juries to be tampered with, and also threatening to go to a parole hearing and blocking a parole of somebody that had been tried in his court, the Daniel Alas case, and a couple other things that he did. When he tried to become a federal judge, he was exposed. So they gave him the U.S. Attorney's Office, thinking he'd be isolated there, and he antagonized so many people up there that half of the attorneys quit. That is unprecedented in the whole history of the U.S. Justice Department. So these are just some of the things that you don't hear about. We will be back Wednesday, at Pacific Standard Time, 4 p.m., and hopefully I'll have Pat Butler, and we'll get into the interesting Chicago politics. He's an expert, 50 years experience, and he knows where some of the bodies are buried, who buried them, why they were buried, and who may be next. So we'll end with our usual politics and poker, which is very appropriate today.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We got to pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, wait.
I'm in.
So am I.
Like.
possible flush? Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Riley, are you thinking of Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of jacks, bat out.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Need a game for children, need a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, got to bet,
where's the call of duck?
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Parrot raise.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll say. Raise your mind.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fajicinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, playing for a pot that's mediocre. Politics and poker, running neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck. Politics and poker, politics and poker, makes the average
Peter Paul Mazzola, and we forgot the USS, not the USS, the battleship Bismarck was launched on this day. We'll get into that another day. Good night, stay safe, and you people back east, if you're coming to San Francisco, don't wear flowers in your hair. So we'll end, and we'll be back Wednesday at 4 p.m., and hopefully we'll have Pat Butler updating us on the most interesting politics in the country, Chicago politics.